career sucks.
Sex just isn't the same.
What's my purpose?
Where did this fat come from?
My relationship is killing me.
I'll never be happy.
My debt is piling up. I'll never find love. Why can't I be like other gay guys? Hey guys, it's time to get a grip, stop whining, make a bold move, and do something amazing with your 40 plus gay life. Let's get to the show with your Tell It Like It Is host, Rick Clemens, who does his best to never act like a dick or a diva unless you act like one first.
Hello, listeners. You cannot come out of the closet and be yourself without at some point feeling like, oh, what is this thing within me? It's like this weird little monster. It's this thing that scares me to death. But you also can't come out of the closet without being fully self-expressed. And I truly see our LGBTQ plus journey out of the closet and into the world is the most amazing way of being fully self-expressed. And then when I meet a guest like I'm about to introduce you to, and they are a filmmaker, they are an author, they've been an actor, they run a, you know, they do so many things in the arts and everything. This guy is fully expressing himself. He does arts management. He is currently manager of a theater in New York area, Westchester County to be specific. We'll let him share all that good stuff. It warms my heart to be able to have a conversation about why we step out and let those little monsters go away and scurry away. Even at 60 years old, there are times my little monster still rears its ugly head and says, ooh, you should be scared of that girl. But anyway, I'm so excited to have Gregory G. Allen on. And as I said, he's an author, a screenwriter, a filmmaker, all these great things. I do, because I'm kind of ADD myself that way. Like, I got to do this and this and this. So, Gregory, welcome to the podcast, man. I'm so excited to have you here and having this conversation today.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm really, really excited to be talking to you.
You're a creative. So, you know, podcast is a creative thing as well. And it's so interesting when people see you being that creative thing, because for most of us as creatives, we can't just go, okay, I'm just going to do this thing. This is the only thing you're going to do, right?
It's the hardest thing. It's like when you put, what title do I put under my name? I keep putting slashes like under my name on my email. It's like, writer, filmmaker, advocate, because it's too hard to be put in a box. It really is.
Right. But yet most of us still struggle with that being put in a box because, hey, as an LGBTQ plus person, all we were done to is being put in boxes. Now you can't be that.
You're right.
That's how you're supposed to show up, all this sort of stuff. But I also find as a creative myself, because, you know, podcast, writer, all these different things that I do, I used to play and dabble in musicals and stuff. Okay, maybe a little more than play and dabble. Yes, I was a theater geek, but I was a straight theater geek. I wasn't a gay theater geek back then. You know, I'm just the guy that likes doing theater, you know?
Yeah.
But I also hated playing football. So there we go. You know?
No. I hear you.
It's really hard to like go, oh, just do this thing. Just do this thing. I love being creative. And it sounds like that's the same thing for you. So out of everything you get to do, is there anything that like really just lights you up? Like, oh my gosh, if this one thing were taken away, I don't know if I could actually do it. Like a filmmaker or writing or anything. Is there any of your little babies, one of the things like, please don't take that baby away from me?
That's really hard. I moved to New York from Texas back in the late 80s because I thought I was going to be, you know, an actor. The goal was musical theater, Broadway. That's where I wanted to be. I was already writing by then with a children's theater company in Texas. And the woman there said, Greg thinks he's going to New York to be an actor. He's going to be a writer. Like she announced it in the paper at one point in an article. And I think maybe it's the writing. It's the act of storytelling. Mm-hmm. And filmmaker, I'm a storyteller. An actor, I'm a storyteller. A writer, I'm a storyteller. And more importantly for me, it's telling our community stories.
Yes.
It's so important to get that out. You just said in the intro about, you know, a guy in your 60s and the monster comes out. I think we come out over and over and over again in life. It's not that one time, wherever that one time was for you.
Yep.
I mean, anytime somebody sees my wedding ring and they assume your wife and you have to say, no, my husband, it's a constant coming out. Mm-hmm. Like we don't just get this, hey, world, it's over and over again.
Right. And even as a creative, though, you're coming out. Like, I mean, I know So I'm kind of in the midst of that myself right now. I've written one book. People know it, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. It was my coming out story, but it's also a coming out story. And then how do you move through different pieces? So it was my first foray to writing a book. And it happened at a time, like, I really want to tell my story, but I also, as a coach, want to, like, okay, so when you're in this space of, you know, dealing with the religious stuff, or you're in this space of, I don't even know how to be gay, or if I'm in this space of going through a divorce, because I was married to a woman and went through all that sort of stuff. So now I'm coming out about a different book that everybody's like, oh, is it going to be gay oriented? I'm like, well, not exactly. Well, why not? I'm like,
yeah.
Because my little creative head didn't want to write another gay book yet. I mean, I have a whole bunch of ideas about that sort of stuff, but it's almost like, oh, I'm almost afraid to come out and say, yeah, I'm writing the book that I hope is the thing that can help move. I would love to move millions of people into standing firm and just being unapologetically who they are in the world. That's what the premise of the book is how to be unapologetically yourself, regardless of sex, gender, or any of this stuff. Right.
Well, and that's a great lesson for any of us to hear. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So, but it's interesting because I've had those moments. I mean, I'm shopping, as an author, when you're shopping for representation and publishing and all this stuff, it's like, it's tough. But even like I've already had one agent say, well, why didn't you write a gay book? I'm like, because I didn't. Well, we really only want to represent gay content. Of course, you know, and I thought about that.
Yeah.
I could turn this book into a book for gay men over 40 really easily, but and I might, depending on, you know, hey, if I'm not getting representation, I might go, okay, bitches, I just changed everything. Now will you represent me?
You know? I say stay true to yourself, because that happened with me with one of my books that I've shopped it around, and I had a publisher saying, we will publish this if you change the twist. Now I'm talking fiction. And I said, I'm not changing the twist. And finally, I found the right publisher who was willing to publish it without me having to remove what I thought was a big integral part of the book. So I say, stay true to yourself.
Which is exactly what this podcast is all about, is just continuing to stay true to yourself, live your life uncloset, and be who you are. So one of your books actually kind of is similar to what we're talking about right now. When you wrote Monsters of Marymount Mansion, you told me before this, and I'm going to try to see if I can say this without blowing everything. It isn't a gay themed book, but it has lots of lessons in it about being yourself and being truly who you are.
Perfect. That was perfectly said. It is I've written 11 different books. I wrote adult novels, and then over a decade ago, I started writing children's books. It happened by a fluke. I didn't think I was going to be a children's book author. I wrote a book about my godson with autism. It won a contest. It was published. It took off. And next thing you know, I'm going to schools and I'm talking about autism awareness all the time, mostly in April, but during Autism Awareness Month, but all the time. I was standing in front of these kids one day, and what I'm saying to them is, it's okay to be different. Don't be scared of a child with autism just because they're different than you. And that freaking Oprah light bulb went off, my aha moment above my head. And I'm like, wait a minute, I've been writing this story since I was 15. Because at 15, I wrote a musical. It was a one-act musical, but this children's theater company in Texas produced it. And it was all about monsters and vampires and mummies. And they lived in this basement of this little hotel. I can't even remember what it was all about, but I remembered it was about hiding because they were different.
Yep.
And I thought, could I ever grab that and turn that into a book? Never did it. Now, like I said, a decade's gone by. I'm talking to these kids about it. And last year, I wrote on social media, I am doing this book by next Halloween. Like, I just set it out there. And I did. And I asked my mom, I'm like, is there a script of that story in anywhere in a box? No. So it's my book is based on that premise, but I changed it up to, it is an 8-year-old monster who lives in the bottom of the Marymount Mansion. There is a caretaker. There is an ally upstairs that takes care of the monsters. She knows they're there. No one else knows they're there. And she allows them to come upstairs when she throws a Halloween party, because they mix in with the others. People think they're in costumes. And this particular year, she and the monster's moms have decided that little Toby can go out into the world and go trick-or-treating. If somebody grabs your skin, tell them it's a costume, it's on tightly. Right. He goes out in the world, and he's decided, well, I want to go again. Let me go out at Thanksgiving and I'll dress up like a turkey. let me go at Christmas and be an elf. But his little adventures, he really just wants to be seen for himself. Can I just be accepted for me? Now, for me, a gay man, you know, in my mid-50s, I'm writing about coming out of the closet. It is so obvious to me that's what I'm writing about.
Yep.
But what I love is that other people read it and they think, oh, that's my child who has problems with other people picking on them for whatever reason it may be. That's my child that feels isolated and alone. So many people can relate to it, even though I know it was about a coming out story.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It's so interesting that you talk through that because it made me start to think about. So I started speaking pretty consistently and professionally back in 2014, 2015, somewhere along those lines. And I started speaking in high schools and colleges. I was already giving back. I was part of a PFLAG speakers bureau in the LA area. And it was just volunteer, come speak, right? Come speak in sexuality classes, gender studies, high schools, wherever they would want to, like, hey, bring the queers in so we can let them parade across stage and really tell their story, sort of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But as I was working through that, because my core essence of my business was about helping guys in midlife come out of the closet, I started seeing like this beautiful essence of what was at the core of my brand, which was about being more authentically who you are. Of course, the A word was being thrown around, like, you know, everybody was talking authenticity. I'm like, I don't want to be, that's not my thing. And I landed a gig at a high school and I was going to speak to the entire high school, two different sessions. And I thought, what is my brand really about for high school kids? Yes, it's about being who you are, but it's really more about our quirks, our quirkiness of who we are in the world. And I see, you know, me being a gay man, that's just little one quirk of my DNA. It's not anything wrong with it. It's just an interesting quirk, like being a bald guy. It's one interesting quirk of my DNA, right? And that became the title of the talk, Make Your Quirk Work. And it was a big hit. I had a little monster image I had a whole series of monster images that were actually part of what we put on some t-shirts. T-shirts didn't go far because, you know, you learn these things along the way. It's like, okay, you can go talk at a high school and you're going to have t-shirts to sell. I'm like, kids at high school don't have money to go buy a t-shirt right then and there, right?
No.
So that's okay. We set up some funky little store and said, here we go, right? So, but it is interesting because I've seen that in my world, like telling your story and letting yourself step out of the monster that's afraid to be who you are and accept yourselves. This is a lifelong journey. As you said, we are coming out constantly.
It is so such a lifelong. And I think, look, as a children's book author, if I can get to these younger kids and just be one voice in the messaging of inclusion and empathy and acceptance of other people's differences without ever saying gay to them, that's my goal. Now, my other goal of this book is get into those states that are banning those books because my book doesn't say it. So here, please take my book.
Yeah, please take my book. Read it. Yeah.
Yep. Because people can relate to it. Now, do I have other things I've done in there? Sure. There's an old wise monster that lives in the basement and his name just might be an anagram for something to do with a gay man. But that's just my own private little joke that I put in there, you know?
Well, now, but see, you just came out of the closet about that.
So yeah, there you go.
Everybody's going
to
go.
Now people are going to try to figure, I won't say what it is. They can look at the book and go, what is this word?
What is it? I love it. I love it. I love it. I have another good friend who he writes these books called Conscious Bedtime Stories for Kids. And, they're amazing. The illustrations and everything are beautiful. And just to think about at a young age, starting, and a girlfriend of mine from work, when she had her little girl, I'm like, I want to send something. And I'm like, oh, I'll send her like three copies of the Conscious Bedtime books. There's like, I don't know, 24 in the series at this point, maybe 28. I don't know. He's grown this thing so huge. And she literally just this morning sent me a message and said, I just want you to know, you know, I'm not going to say her daughter's name because I want to protect the privacy, but she loves these books and she's old enough now. She's like a year and a half. So she's walking and starting to talk a little bit. She goes, first, she's so fascinated with the, you know, the characters and the illustrations, but she goes, She literally sits with me at the end, because at the end of each book, it's like, okay, so now we're going to, you know, we're going to breathe together. And she literally sits there and does the breathing with her. And I'm like, these sort of things, what you're doing, what he's doing, like giving kids these pathways to see this lens of being authentically yourself or doing it differently without going, beat him over the head saying, here it is. I love this concept of helping kids get this, especially in those lovely states like the one you moved from, where things are getting bad, right?
Yeah.
It's so crazy, because it's like, oh, you don't want kids to have this, but you want them to have that, you know?
Well, in my brain's always been, if anybody wants to Google me and like these schools that have me, I'm like, they can look me up. They can, of course. They know I'm gay. I think it's happened a few places where once they realized that, they were like, oh no, we don't want to have him back or something. But, you know, part of this whole in and out of the closet thing, I came out young. I came out at 19 to my family. So after I moved to New York, I came out. I knew by seventh grade, I stayed in the closet all through high school. I had all my girlfriends and whatnot. I didn't have my first boyfriend until the summer after my senior year. And then I went off to New York. And so it was a whole new world.
Whole new world. So there we go.
When I got to New York, I grew up very religious. I was in the church every time the doors were open. We were Southern Baptist. I found a church on the Upper West Side within a few months, and the minister of that church had been a huge model in New York, and he had been gay, and now he was married with children. And I was like, oh, God brought me to this man, and this is why I'm meant to meet him. Cut to, that's not true. That did not happen. The man never changed. We lost him to AIDS. We lost his wife to AIDS. I waited many years, and that book, my first novel in 2011, was about that part of my life. Mm-hmm. And it was fiction, but it was based on what happened then. So Well of My Soul was about this very religious man who had this other type of life at one point. So I thought, well, I'm going to be a gay author. Well, when the children's book stuff started, I thought, oh, I'm in a quandary here. How do I handle these two worlds? I went back in the closet, so to speak. Yes. I started writing my gay stuff under a pseudonym, and publishers were publishing it. And I thought, well, I can't be this guy out here at all these schools, my autism awareness, and be writing these gay books. And I stayed that way for a while. I would say the pandemic is probably when I finally said, hey, everybody, that was me. Like, this is bull crap that I've been doing this. And I am that person. And why did I go back in the closet for this? I was so angry at myself. I think politically what was happening in the world made me angry.
Yep.
I wrote a play, which became a short film, which now I have a feature script called Hiding in Daylight. People can watch the short film on Amazon Prime, plug. But it's about two gay couples that a gay couple and a lesbian couple that have to hide and pretend that they are married to the opposite person in order to survive in this dystopian future in the US. After a certain president that we had gone through changed all these rules.
Yep.
And that's what this story was about. It was about having to go back in the closet and hide. And I think working on that made me say, I can't stay in the closet and say, I'm not writing this stuff. I write both. I am a children's book author and I'm an adult author. And guess what? Sometimes I write about gay stuff.
Yep. I feel the same way, you know, and it's interesting because I had my own journey with the second book and everything. But then also, even as I have kept bringing this podcast and my other podcast to life, 40 plus gay men, gay talk. So there's my shameless plug too. So we've both now shamelessly plugged our other stuff.
We're both 40 plus. So there you go.
Yes, we are both 40 plus, which I'm actually going to get to that because I want to talk about that. Cause you know, we've got listeners in that audience on the listening to this one too, but I had some trepidation around doing the 40 plus because I knew it was going to be a little more down and dirty. We're going to talk about sex. We're going to talk about being on Grindr and Scruff. We're going to talk about open relationships in a big way. We're going to talk about all these things that gay men over 40 really are coming to terms with. Not that you young ones listening under 40 aren't contending with it. Okay. I get that. But I'm sorry, if you're 22 and like, I don't know if I'm ready to be in an open relationship, go date some more, figure that out, get down the road, you know, all that sort of stuff. But I had some real trepidation around it. Ironically, that one actually started, and a lot of listeners know it, that one actually started as 40 plus real men, real talk, because I wanted to be speaking to men in general about the bullshit that men harbor and hold on to that keeps them from being the kind of men they want to be. And I'm like, I wanted to be an ambassador into the men's world. And I have done a lot of work with men of all ages, races, genders, and all this sort of stuff. You know, it's not just the gay guys.
Mm-hmm.
I was really nervous when I made the decision, like, it's not going to be called 40 plus real men, real talk. Cause I'm like, okay, I'm really going to put that, you know, line in the sand once again, that I am really kind of a gay ambassador. This is who I am. And then I was professionally working for a company that I wasn't sure, like, oh, how's this going to fly? And when it was like, what you do is what you do,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then when I was able to be more open and everything, and not that let me rephrase that. I was always able to be open in the company, but I'm like, okay, I'm actually a significant figure in that company at this point. And I interact with a huge majority of our customers, and there's no reason to hide what I do, nor can I, because I talk about, I work for a professional speaking company. And so when I'm working with professional speakers and they're like, well, what do you speak on? I'm like, well, just go to the website, just be ready. there. If you go listen to certain podcasts, you're going to be really shocked by some stuff, but I talk more about building your speaking business and all that stuff. And I think this is where, as individuals, again, you're always coming out. There's always going to be these things. And now, given especially the temperature of LGBTQ plus life is in the US and globally being kind of on, you know, we're front and center again, we're fighting for our rights in ways that we haven't really had to fight for. This is only going to put all of us in spaces to go, can I be fully authentic in who I am? And if not,
you're right,
why not?
Because I get tired of hearing from people like, oh, well, you gay people, all you ever talk about is gay. Why is everything gay? Or anytime we get excited because there's a new gay series on or a new gay film has come out, you know, they're like, that's all you care about. No, we want to be seen. We want to be heard. We want our stories heard. We don't want to be erased. When I wrote Hiding in Daylight, it was about a not too distant future where they are erasing us. And I kept watching every day going, guys, it's happening little by little.
It is happening.
And it's happening a lot now, like in each state trying to erase us.
Yep.
And it makes me personally say, no, I can't just sit by and be quiet and not talk about it. Yeah, you follow me on social media. Some of you follow me because of my kids' books, but you're going to see me sitting there talking all the time, politics, about what's happening in our community. Mm-hmm. Sorry, mm-hmm. I have to be vocal about it.
One of my favorite comebacks to a statement like that, when people say something like that, oh, you're so excited about this, why does it always have to be gay, gay, gay? I said, because guess what? For every new show that comes out that showcases LGBTQ life, another life is saved. Another person is going to stay on the planet.
You're right.
And they don't know what to do with it. They don't know what to do. They're like, well, some of them do. Like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, because somewhere there is somebody, and I don't care if they're a teen, an elementary school kid, or an adult, or an adult in midlife, somebody is still feeling like, I'm the only one. I'm the only one. And the more they can see there's everybody else is out there. Yeah. There's lots of people doing this. If one episode of my podcast somebody listens to, and I'm not saying this to like grandstand, but I get letters a lot. Oh my gosh, I listened to this and it made me feel like I'm not alone. Oh my gosh, your episode showed up with Gregory, and just knowing there was this kid's book out there that wasn't pushed, I'm going to go take that and get it in my school. You know, these are the things to me that's like, we're just saying we're here. Yes, mm-hmm. we're queer, but we're here. We're humans. We are simply humans doing the same things you want to do, except for that one piece that you all seem to get hung up on. What we're doing in our bedroom.
Oh my gosh. And I'm like, if there were a camera on me and my husband, 23 years being together, we sit and watch TV like everyone else. We go and make our dinner like everyone. Like, It would be the most boring reality right. show to watch us.
And for many of them, it's like, and guess what? There's a lot of people in our community who are probably having as boring a sex as you're having with your spouse. So shut up. Shut up. If they're even having sex. I mean, come on. Let's be realistic about this. We're human beings. These things happen.
Yeah. But you know, you're right about, though, that for that you say it's saving one person. I remember being a teenager and watching the movie An Early Frost when it came on TV, watching it with my mother, knowing I was gay, and I was shaking. I was freaking shaking. And at the end, and I've told mom this, my mom is so accepting now. I mean, we went through rough times when I first came out. Like I said, we were very religious. My family's amazing. But I said, well, that's really sad because he's going to go to hell. It was all about Early Frost. It was about the man was dying of AIDS. And my mom said, I don't think he's going to hell. And I've told her since, I'm like, you had no idea what that said to me, your son sitting there, that we weren't discussing it. But, you know, talking about this gay man's not going to hell. And mom's like, well, thank God I said the right thing when I did then. But yeah. That's because there was something on TV that I could be like, oh, those are gay men. And, you know,
I remember sitting and watching. And OK, so you and I have a lot of similarities. I was in the Bible Belt when all this was starting to unfold for me. I came out at 19. The difference is I went back in the closet right thereafter. OK, I was raised Seventh-day Adventist, so big Christian upbringing, you know, all that sort of stuff. It was all of it was hanging over me like the whole time. Right. So go back in the closet, graduate college, immediately get married to my ex-wife. You know, all is good. I didn't have a problem being with a woman. That wasn't anything. But the whole time I'm like, oh, this isn't who I am. And I remember when we moved to California, I was a California kid. I mean, I've spent most of my life in California after all the detour through the Bible Belt and everything. And I remember right after we moved to Irvine, California, sitting on the couch and watching Making Love with my wife.
Wow.
Now, let's just put that in context. And for those of you who don't know it, you need to go check out Kate Jackson. Oh, yeah. I can't remember the other two guys, the two hot guys. But anyway. Yeah, who were the guys? Do you remember? We could probably look it up because we're both in our computers.
One of them was a big name. Yeah.
Yes. What, like Harry Hamlin? Is that right? Yeah. It wasn't Harry.
I think it was Harry Hamlin.
Yeah. I was going to say. And I was like, oh, he's so handsome, you know? And I'm like, okay, well.
And Michael Ancheen.
Harry Michael, Hamlin. Michael, oh, my goodness. Oh, okay. My heart monitor just went, oh, girl. Yes. But, it was just one of those moments where I'm like, oh my gosh, this is kind of what I'm feeling. And it was so interesting because I don't even know why my wife was like, okay, yeah, this could be interesting.
Let's watch Making Love about a man.
And then like 9 years later, 10 years later, here we are. The whole same thing is unraveling in our world, you know?
Wow.
And it was one of those moments when I realized, without that, I wonder what would have happened, even though it took another 10 years down the road, you know,
but and I needed
that spark. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, okay. Well, you know, either of those guys was a spark, but I mean, there was the way of the world was part of what was like making it not cool. You know,
you and I
both came out at the same exact time. For me, one of the reasons I know that I went back in the closet was I was very naive. I didn't really have, I mean, I dated girls in high school and stuff, but sex with a woman hadn't happened yet. So sexually I wasn't really active. I had lots of fantasies about stuff, but always was so, oh, that's so bad. That's so bad. That's so bad. Right. And because of some religious therapy, not conversion therapy, but I went and talked to the hot pastor at the church, and that didn't help. He was really good looking. So wasn't helping mom and dad, but, I know for me, when I did go back in the closet, one of the biggest things was my dad's oldest brother was one of the very first ones to die from HIV and AIDS. And this was early 80s. And I've said this numerous times on this podcast, and the listeners are probably really tired of it, but hopefully there's brand new listeners going, I've never heard this story. I honestly believe, Gregory, I wouldn't be here had I not gone back in the closet, because I would have been really stupid out there doing stuff I had no idea about. And because of what was happening in the world at that time, anything could have gone on. So well, let's kind of roll
journey, and that was the way you were supposed to go. And it's absolutely funny when I said to you before about when I came to New York and I met that pastor, I thought he was going to change me. I literally thought, oh, he'll change me. I'll go home and marry my high school sweetheart. P.S. Yep. We're still the closest of friends. She's a lesbian. She and her wife and me and my husband travel together all the time. But
that's awesome.
It was the same thing where I thought it was going to happen that way of, oh, well, he's going to change me. I got to get you a copy of my Well With Myself. I think you might like this book.
I think I might too. But so now here we are. You've got books out, you've got films out and everything. So let's, you know, you're a guy and, you know, you're past 40 as a gay man. What's really changed? Because so much has changed, but what really hasn't changed? I'd love your perspective on that. We don't have to go clear into like, other than, yeah, you know, we have an idiot that was president and then everything got screwed up. But there's a lot that hasn't changed. And when I hear somebody go, well, is this really necessary even these days? I'm like, yes.
Yeah, it's true. And it's funny. Like, I never thought I would become that older guy that says, oh, the younger generation doing XYZ. And then I find myself doing it just as a side note, like with music and whatnot. I'm like, do I want to listen to that?
Right. But exactly.
I feel like when I was in my 20s, I was always hanging out with older guys, the older generation, listening to their stories, learning from them, just trying to make sure that I stayed connected to that part of it, even though like I moved to New York in the late 80s. But it was still, I wanted to be connected to everything I knew about Stonewall. Oh, my book came out, Well of Myself came out on National Coming Out Day and launched at Stonewall. I had a launch party at Stonewall Inn in the city back in 2011 when it came out. But I wanted to stay connected to that whole era. I think what's changed is in some ways things are moving quickly. Like I watch what's happening with the transgender movement and it things what took us so long to get to as gay men and lesbians,
yep,
I feel like it's going faster now. And
yep,
and either they're really great at getting their messaging out and getting people to understand in doing that, and non-binary and things of this nature, it's also rearing that ugly head of the people in our country saying, ah, all of this scares me and you're all right, freaks, and they want to push us all back into a closet. So mm-hmm. I think while there was change, I think some of that change is getting pulled back. I just saw that another state's trying to put it on, I think Indiana or someone, to get rid of gay marriage in their state.
Yep.
So we're constantly having to fight. I mean, I remember I cried when gay marriage became legal. I'm like,
yep,
it was never in my brain that I would marry mm-hmm. my husband. Never. Like,
yep,
we're not going to get to do that. Right. So I guess my biggest fear is I love all what I see our community pushing forward on. And the fear is how much every time we push of how much they're trying to take.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And sometimes when things are moving so fast, are they moving so fast that we're not actually thinking through it enough to make it stick? You know, I think somewhat to some degree, gay marriage, that was part of it. We were pushing, and it's interesting because I guess, okay, I don't think I've ever shared this with my audience, so this could cause like, okay, people are going to go, really? I didn't know that. I was like, I don't give a shit about gay marriage. I've already been married, been there. I don't need that. I don't want that. And then I'm like, well, wait, there's other reasons for it. There's mm-hmm. like the protections. There's the monetary stuff and everything. And you know,
there's inheritance tax if your partner.
All of this stuff, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. All this sort of stuff. So this is kind of a joke, but it was actually kind of serious. So we were domestic partners because we lived in California, so that was like the rule of the land at the time. And then gay marriage came along, and we could do it, right? And we're like, we weren't the first to jump on, not because we didn't love each other. We're like, things are working pretty good for us. Do we need to do this? And then we met with our accountant, and he goes, well, if you guys had gotten married last year, you would have saved about $10,000. Of course, I want to just slap the shit out of him right then and there. I'm like, okay, really? Do you think you could have told us this before December 31st last year? And so now here we are, it's April, and he goes, well, I'd recommend it. Well, even after he recommended it, did we do it? No, not really. But that year we did start like kind of falling. And so I did. So I was proactive and I went to him like in October and said, okay, man, here's what we got. Here's what my business is doing. Here's what I'm earning working for this other company. Here's what my other investment's doing. What should we do? He goes, well, are you guys going to get married this year? And I said, well, am I going to get the same lecture if in April of next year? He goes, yes, but it's probably going to actually be worse. And so he gave us some really solid numbers. Did we get married for the money? Kind of, sort of. Did we get married because we loved each other? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad we did, because it grounded so many things for us. Not that, again, nothing was wrong with our relationship, but it grounded like, okay, we are here. We're going through this. Not that something couldn't change at any given time, but we're going forward. This is the way we're going forward. And I remember thinking in my own head, weird thoughts that we have as creatives, like, well, if I don't get married, then am I going to be like the hypocrite talking about, go do it, get it done, I'm saying all this stuff on podcasts, and like, well, why aren't you, Rick? Why aren't you?
Uh-oh.
You know?
Yeah.
And so these are these interesting things. The other thing I think about this movement so quickly, and I'm going to use my own work as a speaker as the example. When I started speaking in colleges, Gregory, me being the guy who'd been married to a woman and coming out of the closet, I mean, jaws would drop in those classes. Like, really? Did you just decide to be gay? No, I didn't decide to be gay. Did you suddenly like guys? No, I didn't suddenly like guys. You know, da, 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 right? It took, so that would have probably been 2014 or 15. I was doing a lot of stuff with PFLAG. Within a very quick couple of years, I was irrelevant, because the transgender discussions and movements and all that was all the stuff that we're starting to be talking about. And I didn't mind that I had become, quote, irrelevant. I was like, I had moved on to other speaking stuff and everything. But again, we were moving at, as you said, we were moving at the speed of sound at that point, and we still are. And I'm so glad we are, because I know it's pushing some buttons, and I'm so glad those buttons are being pushed, because it's time for us to consciously wake up as a planet and really understand that people are people, you know. And I know, I don't know that you and I will ever see it in our lifetime. I would love to see it in our lifetime, that all this changes. But I think that's one of the things I've noticed about, yes, so much has changed, but yet so much stuff still remains the same. Like I said, anytime somebody says to me, is it really necessary for you to be a coming out coach? I'm like, if you look around what's happening right now, probably more than ever, because there's many people who are older, you know, I'd say older people in their 30s and 40s, 50s, who are hitting those moments. I mean, I just coached a client today who, he's 58 years old and just going through this, you know, quote, truth change in his life. That says there's still work to be done.
There's huge still work. And I look at that, and, you know, some of it, my heart breaks for them, thinking, wow, all those years they weren't able to be their true selves. Yep. But then I also say, these are choices we make in life. And some of these people have amazing families because of it, and they have children. Yep. Then they have to navigate the way people are, you know, who gets hurt and who's able to accept it and move on with what that new truth is.
Yeah. And that's a lot of why I do the work, you know.
I want to
do the work to help them navigate it. You know, it was a really painful conversation we had today, and I'm not going to go into it because I want to respect my client's privacy, but you know, there's pain. There is deep pain that's happening right now for him and that family.
Right.
There's also deep growth and deep freedom and beauty that will happen on the other side of it, provided everybody chooses to move through and move on. Because there's nothing worse in my mind than for the spouse who's caught in that on the other side of the fence to not be able to see, you really want this? You really want this to continue the way it is? You know, I had a client not long ago who, for 9 years, they have not been intimate and slept together. And yet the spouse, when this was all unraveling, is like, but you were supposed to be my everything. We were going to grow old together, and you're everything. I'm like, is this really? And I'm not saying that sex is everything. I think intimacy is a huge piece of our world. It's not the sex, the intimacy piece. And, you know, that client said, we've been roommates for 12 years. That's what we've been, roommates. We sleep in separate bedrooms. We get up, we make breakfast, we go on trips together. And that particular client said, and it's really painful when we go on trips together because we love to go on cruises. And there's, it's weird to be on a cruise and, you know, like we're married, but we're living, we're sleeping in twin beds in the cabin. You know, it's just these interesting things. So I think it, it is really interesting to see how far we've come in all these different nuances, but to also realize the work is not done. The work is by no means done.
I like that you're helping, you know, these people on in the older end of the spectrum. And I'm trying to get the kids before they get out.
Absolutely.
There. Like, you know what? It's okay if you want to be different. One of my kids' book is called Irving the Theater Nut. And it's for all those little kids that don't want to play sports. They want to be the theater, the choir, the band. And so I made this whole book about this little squirrel that all he wants to do is perform. And he watches kids rehearsing. And, you know, so
that's awesome.
I'm trying in my way to do that with the younger generation.
Well, and the beautiful thing is, you know, you're doing it for the younger generation. You're also showcasing to those of us, quote, in our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, the value of doing what you love to do. So many people, you know, in the, I'm going to go with the gay men's community for a lot of my conversations, they hit their 40s and they're like, okay, I have no passion. I have no purpose, but hey, man, this making the money I'm making is great, but I don't really enjoy what I do. I don't really want to be here, but they are, it's another coming out story. They are petrified to actually admit that and try to go do something different because it's a huge life change.
Story. And I didn't even go there with you that I spent 13 years in corporate America and walked away to go back into the arts because my soul was dead. I'm like, the money was amazing. And I climbed the corporate ladder, but it was no good. So that's great that people can have that coming out and go, I got to find what that is, you know?
And I think that's one of the things. Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that we as the LGBTQ plus community sometimes forget for ourselves. I don't care what the transition you're about to go through, whether it's literally a transition because you're transgender, whether it's a transition about career, whether it's a transition about a relationship ending, transition about choosing to become parents. We have done some of the hardest things that any community on the planet can do. We have come out of the closet to live authentically. And if that next thing you want to do, leaving corporate America after 13 years to go into the arts is your next coming out story, choosing to have children as a gay or lesbian couple, going through a transition because you know in your heart and soul of who you are, that's underneath that, that you are absolutely a transgender individual. Remember, you've already done some of that work and you did it. That's huge props to you. And a lot of times we forget, tap into that energy, go make it happen. And I'm sure as a creative, there are times you're like, okay, I'm going to start this new book, but oh my gosh, is it going to, and right there we are. Oh, is anybody going to like it? Is anybody going to buy into it? Is this really the best story? You got to come out and admit, I'm scared about this. I'm nervous about my new book. You're like, am I ever going to get representation? If I don't, then I freaking just go self-publish. I don't really care. The book is done. There's all sorts of beautiful ways. So
we change the way we view success. I've learned that throughout all my years. Is stop. My success was supposed to be I was going to be a performer on Broadway. Guess what? I've had a very successful life, and that never happened. So change the way you view success in your life. And I've had incredible friends who have pointed that out to me along the way.
People say that to me too. If somebody had told me in 1999, when I came out of the closet, that I would be doing a podcast that has over 600 episodes. Well, first of all, nobody knew what the hell a podcast was back then, but I would have said, no, that is not who I, even when I started this podcast, it was because of a girlfriend of mine saying, you should really be doing, you know, well, it was internet radio at the time. You should do a show. You should take over my, and I'm like, no. And that's actually how this came into being. She decided she didn't want to do her show anymore. And she's like, I got 26 episodes left with the company. They're willing to like redo artwork and everything. You should. I'm like, I'm not, this is not what Rick does. Rick does not get behind a microphone. I always say, go listen, folks, go find episode one. You're like, this guy should not be doing a podcast. because it was so scripted. It's like, hi, welcome to, you know, it wasn't Life on Closet at the time. Welcome to the Coming Out Lounge. Today, we are so excited to be talking. Oh, it was dreadful, Gregory. As a creative, you'd be like, get that guy off the mic. Get him gone now. Which I love that I can just be like what I am right now with this. Because I like, this is my passion. Yeah, this is totally it. So, and I love that you have showcased this so beautifully today with your books and talking about your films and where you are in your own journey and just giving so much to my audiences, both of them, and sharing who you are, man. So what's next?
I really love coming out. You know what? The back burner is a YA novel, which is actually a sequel to that first novel I wrote in 2011, but it'll be a standalone YA. So I'm going to jump into another genre.
Yep. So, and for any of you who don't know, Speak Like We Author Speaks, YA is young adult. So that's what that means. So I've learned a lot being an author, and you know, it's like we all learn the lingo, and then you got, and part of getting a deal. You got to know how to talk the lingo. Like if you don't understand what a book agent or somebody's saying, you're like, okay, this person isn't ready. But but anyway, well, thank you. It's been such a great conversation, man. I love it. And anyone who wants more information on all the stuff that Gregory's doing, just go to the website. There's lots of links showing. We'll go right to his website and showcase some of his books and stuff. And just continue to go out there and be yourself. I don't care if you're just starting your journey or you're in the 40 plus world and going, I don't know if I should be doing this. Guess what? You came out to be yourself. Go be yourself. Thank you again, Gregory, for being here, man. So appreciate you.
Have a good one.
That's a wrap for 40 Plus. Gay men, gay talk, where size doesn't matter. We drop our bullshit, get over our screwed up fears, make bold moves, and live life without apologies. Don't forget to join us on Facebook at 40 Plus. Gay men, gay talk, where the conversations continue.